is an interview with Charles Dodge for the Oral History of Southern San Joaquin, ELM, by Juliette DeRussy at Kern County Museum on 10/23/1977 at 1:48 p.m. Okay, where was the birthplace of ELM? Where were you born?
I was born in Brentwood, California, that is in Contra Costa County, May 10, 1910.
What was your mother, or how long did you live there?
Well, I lived there approximately 2 years in that area. My father was employed on a large ranch there in the Sacramento River Basin, and we were in that area at that time.
What was your mother and father's name?
My father's name was Charles H. Dodge, Sr., and my mother's name was Mary Rosalie Dodge.
Have they lived long in Brentwood before this?
No, my mother was born at the foot of Mount Diablo in Contra Costa County, which is about 30 miles from Brentwood. My dad was a ranch worker at that time. His usual occupation was either a foreman or superintendent on large ranches. And he had been transferred to that area and was running cattle up in the Mount Diablo area.
What was your family's source of income?
Well, my father was a ranch foreman and superintendent, and that was his source of income. Of course, my mother was very young, and she was a teenager. She was about 16 years old.
Did she work, or?
No. No, just a housewife.
How many kids did she have?
Just two, my brother and I.
Is your brother older or younger?
My brother was older. He's deceased now.
Where did your family live in Kern County?
Well, my father first came down to Kern County in about 1922, which is about 55 years ago. And he was employed by the Miller & Lux Ranching Company as the assistant superintendent on the Buttonwillow Ranch, which was a large ranch located about 25 miles west of Bakersfield.
When you lived here in Kern County, how long did you live here?
I came here in 1924.
You did.
I came down here 2 years after my dad came down here. He and my mother had separated temporarily, and I stayed in Oregon. I left Brentwood, California, and we went from there down to the central California, and then we moved up into Oregon, where my father was superintendent on a large cattle ranch in eastern Oregon. Then he came down here to the Buttonwillow Ranch, and I came down a couple of years later.
What was the most interesting thing that you did while you were here with your parents that you really liked?
In my early life here, well, probably the most interesting thing that I did when I came here in 1924, I might add that the Miller & Lux properties had been sold. The Miller & Lux Company got into financial trouble, and my father was temporarily out of a job when they started laying off all of their employees on the large ranches when they were being sold off. And in 1924, the first year I was in Kern County, I spent that winter in a tent out here at Edison. My dad being unemployed, and in those days there was no unemployment insurance or any welfare. You had to either work or starve, and he went out and picked oranges for $1.25 a day, and we lived in a tent out here, and it was a rather bleak, cold winter. At that time I went to the Edison Grammar School out at Edison, and it was a very small school at that time, back probably less than 30 children in school, and I was the only eighth grader.
Well, it says here that your dad really liked prospecting. Did you ever help him?
Well, my dad always had the gold fever. In addition to being a rancher, he prospected up on the Kern River, up at Democrat Hot Springs. There is some gold there, and it's still gold now, but maybe not in paying quantities. But he always thought that there was a lot of gold up there, and when he'd have a few days off, he'd go up there and he'd build sluice boxes and dig in his diggings, and using water from the Kern River, he'd wash the ore down in these sluice boxes, and he was getting some small nuggets out of there. And but I really think there was more rattlesnakes up there than there were was gold, because one summer he killed about 100 rattlesnakes right in that area there on the north side of the river.
When in your life did you get interested in wanting to be a sheriff?
Well, I really didn't think have any idea of being a sheriff when I went into law enforcement. After I finished the local schools here, we had the Depression at that time, and jobs were very hard to find. I got a job driving a truck over the old ridge route. That's the old original ridge route, which had about 800 curves between here and Los Angeles. And I drove a truck over there, and I got acquainted with numerous highway patrolmen between Oakland and Los Angeles, which was my run that I drove. And I got interested in being a highway patrolman, and that was really my goal at the time. But I did see an ad in the paper back in 1937, which told of the Bakersfield City Police Department having an examination for the position of police patrolman. And I thought, well, I'll take that examination to see how well I can do, and maybe it'll help me prepare for the highway patrol examination. So I took the examination, and I placed high enough on the exam to qualify for an appointment. And in early 1937, Chief Robert Powers, who was then the Chief of Police of Bakersfield, and a man who I had known, because in an intervening time when I was going to school here, I had a shoe shining parlor over on F Street, and Chief Powers, at the time I was shining shoes, was a railroad special officer, and I used to shine his shoes. And but he had joined the police department and had risen to the position of police chief, and so I knew him, and I liked him real well, and he offered me the job, and I took it. And so I spent 29 years on the Bakersfield City Police Department before I ever became sheriff.
Well, how did you meet your wife?
How did I meet my wife? Well, I had a first wife. I married my first wife when she was just 17 years old, and I was 21. We had a tragedy in the family. My first wife contracted cancer, and she passed away. And my wife, my present wife, was Mary Holman, who was a police officer for the city of Bakersfield, who I'd known ever since she'd went to work in 1940. And I'd worked with her professionally, and that's how I got to know my present wife. After my first wife passed away, then Mary and I became more romantically inclined, and and we got married about 14 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, I'm going to get back to your earlier life. How was life on the ranch?
How was life on the ranch? Life, that was a good life on the ranch. I remember when I was a young boy, when my dad was the ranch superintendent, we lived in a large two-story house. The ranch superintendent for Miller & Lux, the company, was treated rather royally. He was furnished with a Chinese cook, and so my mother didn't have to do any cooking at all. All she had to do was just straighten up the house and keep it well. And we always had a lot of horses on the ranch because we were on cattle ranches all the time. And had lots of cowboys, and we had bunk houses, and we had blacksmith shops on these large ranches. And it was real enjoyable to go out to a blacksmith shop and smell the burning coke and watch blacksmiths trim horses' hooves and put shoes on them and watch them tighten wagon wheels and repair old wagons. And I remember when I first went to school in the first grade, we weren't bused like kids are now. We had a single horse cart. When I started the first grade, I was 6 years old, my brother was 7 years old, and we drove this single horse cart by ourselves 4 miles to school and even forded the river, because there wasn't a bridge there and where we crossed. And during the winter time, this was up in Oregon, we would cross the river on the ice when the ice froze in eastern Oregon. And life on a ranch was really an enjoyable experience for a child, and it's too bad that many of the children now don't have that same experience. Because we had a lot of fun. We used to get cabs in these corrals, and we'd ride these, put a what we called a surcingle around them, which was a rope around their chest and tummy, and get on and twist their tail a little bit and wind them up, and boy, they just buck like a bucking bronco, worse than these Brahma bulls. I got a broken collarbone as a result of riding calves, but it's just too bad we didn't stay on the ranches with Miller & Lux company hadn't got into financial difficulties, because it was really enjoyable life.
How were Miller & Lux to work for?
Well, they were like any other large company. My dad liked to work for them real well. He worked for them for nearly 20 years, and they were a good company. They fed well. They paid well at that time. The ranch superintendent got about $100 a month, and the house furnished and everything, but that was a lot of money in those days. And we got the choice horses to drive and a nice Surrey to drive. So it was just a nice Surrey with like a Cadillac car now. And they were a very fine company.
Can you remember any of your teachers?
I remember, I don't remember my teacher's name. The teachers that I had, though, were quite competent in those days, especially in grammar school, and even the high school teachers were quite competent, because in those days you had to learn your lessons or you didn't pass. You just stayed in the same grade until you finally learned them. And if a person was found to be unlearnable, then they'd finally give you, if you were 16 years old, they'd give you a work permit, and then you could go out and get you a ditch digging job. That they just figured that you were unable to learn, or if you didn't want to learn.
Were you ever involved in any lodges or anything, or was your father?
Yes, my father was a member of the Moose and a member of an organization known as the Knights of Pythias. These are both still existent now. And of course, I've been involved in quite a number of lodges. predominantly the Masonic Lodge and the Crying Club.
What was the effect of the World War on the police department?
The World War II on the police department, we had rather a mass exodus of officers leaving the department. Some of the younger officers that were unmarried were drafted into the army, and many of them volunteered for service in the army and in the naval forces of the United States during World War II. And I was among those who left and served during World War II. About half of the members of the police department joined the armed forces, and older men who were beyond the draft age took our places on a temporary basis during the war, or those who were classified as 4F and were not considered physically able to serve in the armed forces took over the police job on a temporary basis until the war was over, and then most of us came back and were restored to our positions in the department.
What year did you run for your...
For the office of sheriff? I ran in 1966, which was about 11 years ago. I had finished 29 years of service with the police department, and at that time I was assistant police chief. And I took a leave of absence from the police department, and for 3 months I campaigned throughout the county for the office of sheriff, and in the primary election in June of 1966, I was elected. However, I didn't take office because my predecessor's term had not expired until January of 67, and I took office in January of 67, and I served a four-year term, and then I ran again for sheriff 4 years later and was re-elected. At that time I'd nearly reached my 65th birthday, and I figured that would have, and I'd been in law enforcement for a little better than 37 years, and I figured that that was enough, that it was time to retire.
Well, looking back over the years that you were in the sheriff's department, the police department, and looking about what it is now, do you feel that it was better back then or better now?
Well, I would say it was... There's two schools of thought on that. When I first went into the police department in 1937, people were a lot safer on the streets and in their homes than they are now. The police had a lot more authority then than they have now. There's been numerous high court decisions. The Supreme Court of the United States has rendered several decisions. And so has the California State Supreme Court rendered some decisions on prisoners' rights and on suspects' rights, which did hamper the work of law enforcement officers. But I might say at the same time that some law enforcement officers had overstepped their bounds of authority. These were in the minority, but some had done it, and I think this is the reason we were given these adverse decisions, and the power of a police officer had been limited. Of course, there's a lot of other social and economic conditions that developed over the last 25 to 40 years, which has changed the makeup of the community and their morality and their standards and we've kind of entered into the permissive age where anything goes, and some people have taken advantage of it, primarily the criminal element. And as far as in the early days, when I was a young police officer, the police officer had a lot more authority. We had a vagrancy law that practically covered anything, which you could put a suspect away, at least get him off of the streets at night if he was under suspicious circumstances, and you didn't have to watch him to see if he was going to break into a building or into somebody's home. All these vagrancy laws, which were rather vague, have been ruled unconstitutional, and the police no longer have this wide latitude that we had prior to 1950.
Well, what I want to know is, if you had to do it over again, would you?
Yes, I found police work very enjoyable, and would recommend it for anyone who likes that kind of work, or thinks that they would like it, because there was never a day in the 37 years that I was in police work that I didn't look forward to going to work, whether it was on a graveyard shift or on the night shift. I might add that it's rather hard on family life, because all the new policemen all draw the night shifts. That's been just a custom in the police force, that the older, the more senior you get the better shifts, you get the daylight shift. And this is hard on family life, where you're working from 4 at night till midnight for years on end, or working from midnight to 8. Your whole life is turned topsy-turvy if you have a wife who is either staying home or working daylights, and you're working nights. You just kind of pass at the door, and your family life is disrupted a great deal. Of course, now the officers do have a lot more time off, because they work 40-hour week. When I went to work, we worked 48-hour week, and there was no pay for or compensatory time for overtime, and we more usually worked about a 60-hour week. But I found it very interesting, and sometimes very exciting, and of course we've had a lot of advents of the new communication system. When I went to work, they had no two-way radios. One-way radios had just been introduced into the police service, and we didn't get the two-way radios until 1950. Probably an interesting thing in my teenage days was when my father started the movie picture show out in Arvin in 1925. This was the first theater in that small town. My dad and another gentleman bought an old lease house from the Standard Oil Company here off of one of the leases in the Kern Riverfront. They cut it up and took it out in sections to Arvin, put it back together. They bought some secondhand theater seats, bought a couple of secondhand movie projectors, and we were in business. And we ran the old silent movies, the old Western, black and white, no sound, and the price of a theater ticket then was 25 cents for adults and 10 and 15 cents for children. We were quite successful out there, and my dad started a theater up in Tehachapi, and there was an old building out in Shafter which had been abandoned, so he used to show silent movies out there. He did this for a number of years, and It was kind of fun. I used to sit down by the big stove that we had in the wintertime there, and I had some friends that liked to come and see the movies, and I'd occasionally slip a few of them in the side door. And I remember my dad caught me once, and I got a good licking for that, because it was cutting down on the profit. But the theater was rather successful, and because it was a novelty at that time in these rural areas.
Did, well, like your friends, what did they like think of the theater? Did they think it was great to allow a friend
who had? Well, it was rather harmless, harmless larceny. They were getting where they'd have to pay, they were teenagers and they'd have to pay 25 cents to get in. It saved them 25 cents, and in those days, 25 cents was a lot of money, because that was about the beginning of hard times here in this area. And kids didn't have dollar bills in their pockets then. They had a few coins, they were lucky.
Well, okay, when you were first getting into the police department, when you first started, can you remember what your pay was?
Yes, it was $150 a month.
Was that very much for those?
It was considered a good salary for a high school graduate at that time. $150 a month would buy quite a bit. You didn't live luxuriously. You couldn't buy a television because we didn't have any. But you could pay rent, and you could buy your groceries, and you could support your family on $150 a month if you were frugal.
It says here, memories of the oil booms. Do you remember about the oil boom?
No, the oil boom was prior to my time here. Of course, Bakersfield has always been a rather bright spot, even during the Depression, because there's always it's always had oil under its ground. It's always been a good farming area, and it was one of during the Depression, which started full blast in 1929. Bakersfield was one of the brighter spots here of the nation, because there always was a demand for oil, and there was always a demand for agricultural products, and a person, if you sought diligently enough, you could get a job. I know I was able to keep a job all during the Depression. I never had to go on relief, as they called it then, and never had to beg a meal. I always had a job, even though I was only a high school graduate of average intelligence.
What do you think of Bakersfield?
I think Bakersfield is a great place. I've been to a lot of places in the United States, and while Bakersfield has a little warm weather in the summertime, and it has a little foggy weather for a month or 6 weeks in the wintertime, you take it as a whole, it has a wonderful climate, and it's just a nice place to live, because people here are very friendly as a whole. There are no strangers. People will speak to you here. Where you get in the larger cities, in some places they're quite aloof, and you have to be here regardless of your financial circumstances in life. As long as you lead a good life, other good people will associate with you, whether they're millionaires and you just happen to be an ordinary working man. I know that because I have many friends that are moneyed people, and even before I was in public office, I could you can associate with those people as long as you have a good reputation.
Well, now that Bakersfield's all grown up and everything, do you think this is the high point of it, or do you think it'll grow more?
Oh, it's going to grow more. It's kind of too bad that it is going to grow more, because I thought Bakersfield was a much nicer town when the metropolitan Bakersfield population was about 75,000 people. That was just about right. Now I guess we've reached nearly 250,000 in the metropolitan area. And it's getting now that you don't know as many people as you did then. And the growth seems to be unlimited here. And I think Bakersfield will eventually be a city of probably a 500,000 or more people.
Well, considering that Bakersfield is now, it isn't that quite big of a town yet. No. But when it gets bigger, do you think that the crime is already bad. Do you think it will get higher and higher as it goes?
Well, unless it is checked, unless a lot of circumstances are changed, and maybe some of the court decisions are rescinded by the appellate in the Supreme Court, I don't think the police can do a great deal to protect you, because there just isn't enough of them. And people have to protect themselves, and it's going to get worse if people follow their present paths. However, there may be a change of morality and responsibility, and especially parental responsibility of starting kids out on the right track and not letting them get derailed into a life of crime. But unless this is done, and unless our morals improve, I don't see anything but more crime with more population, because it's followed up to this point here. Bakersfield used to be a very, very quiet little town. I remember when I first went on the police force, practically all the crime was confined to one little area, the Tenderloin District, down on what we called L Street. Gambling parlors down there, and they had a little red light district in there, and if you went down there and hung around some of those streets there, you could expect to maybe get rolled. But we didn't have the horde of criminals driving around in cars now, snatching purses, breaking into people's homes, and stealing televisions, radios, stereo players, and anything else they can sell or trade for dope. And this is one of the things that caused a great deal of the crimes against property and armed robbery, is the young people suddenly deciding that they've got to alter their minds with dope. And especially the heroin addicts, which find that they have to pay such a high price for a fix, and the only way they can get this money is women can become prostitutes, or they can become shoplifters, or the males can become hold-up men, or burglars, or just common thieves, and. This is where a lot of our crime originates from, is the addiction to hard drugs.
Okay, when did you retire?
I retired in 1965, in January, when my second term of office, or 1975 rather, when my second term of office expired.
Have you been enjoying your life after retirement?
Oh yes, very much. I'm awfully busy though, and I serve on a lot of committees and for various organizations. I've helped with fund drives and things like that, and for charitable groups. And then I have my horse that I have to ride to keep him in shape, and I belong to three riding groups. So I find retirement's very enjoyable. We have a trailer and we take trailer trips now and then, and there's just so many things to do when you're retired, if you want to do them. If you want to just sit in a chair and watch television, it would be quite boring, I think.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever go down like visit all the old buddies that you
have? Well, occasionally we have the Police Benefit Association that meets once a month, and some of the old timers who have all also have retired usually go to the meetings, and we We meet there, then we have a retired group which I'm the president of this year of public employees, which many of the old policemen belong to that have retired, and we get together and talk about old times. But the thing you have to avoid when you retire and as you get older is don't live in the past. Look ahead to the future, because there's always another happy day. The main thing is to keep your health.
Seems like you've kept your health pretty good. I mean, what do you do, like, how do you keep in shape?
How do I keep in shape?
Yeah.
I cut my lawn, and I trim my trees, and I ride my horse, and I curry my horse, and I clean my own stable, and I do physical work to stay in shape, because if you don't do physical work, your body will deteriorate, and that's really a necessity when a person gets older. Because we got to remember that we are all going to get older. There's only one alternative to getting older, and that's dying younger.
Yeah, really. What about, like, in the police force, when you were in the police force? Did you stay active then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did. We had we had a gymnasium, and so we used to work out and stay in shape.
What about, like, when you were younger, did you guys ever, when you and your brother were younger, did you guys ever fight like normal brothers?
Oh yeah, we used to have some good ones. We could pick a fight over almost anything, like kids do, because we were only 18 months apart and we were nearly about the same size, and it was a pretty even battle. But we never got into real serious things. It was just a little slugfest.
Who always got in trouble the most, you or
your brother? Well, we both managed to stay out of trouble pretty well. We avoided it because I had an opportunity when I was in about the fifth grade to go to a parochial school up in Baker City, Oregon, which was run by the Catholic faith. And I was indoctrinated into Catholicism and taught about the devil, and he had horns, and there was a hellfire and everything, and it kind of scared me when I was a kid, and I didn't want us burned. So I always managed to stay out, and they told us not to steal, or we would burn in hellfire, and if we did things wrong, well, we would get punished for it in the life hereafter. And that kind of stayed with me, even though I never joined the Catholic Church. That one year that I spent in this boarding school, my brother and I think it did a lot for us. And it's too bad that all children aren't indoctrinated more by the church, regardless of what denomination it is. So that they know that it's wrong to steal, and they feel that they're going to get punished for it sometime.
Well, when you were younger, growing up, what did you want to be?
What did I want to be? I wasn't really, really sure when I was young. I played everything. I played cops and robbers, played cowboys and Indians, and we rode stick horses over the hills, and of course, coming from a ranch, I always loved horses, and I even thought that maybe I'd like to have been a bronco buster or a rodeo rider at one time, but it didn't work out that way.
It didn't. Did your dad have any influence on you ever to... Like, did he ever say, I want you to go into farming, or I
no,
want
No, my dad never suggested to me what I might want to do, because I left home as soon as I left high school, and I went on my own. And
when you were little, did he ever help you with, like, projects that you had to do?
No, my dad was busy working. He were on the ranches. He worked long hours, and we didn't have he didn't really have the time that they have now. to do these things. We helped out on the ranch. If we had cows, we'd help with those. We lived for a short time up in Bend, Oregon, and we had a, my dad operated a slaughterhouse and a dairy and a small ranch up there, and we had to help out. There was always work to do. We didn't have gas lines running heat in and into the houses. We had to saw the wood, and we sawed that old juniper wood, and it'd take you all Saturday to saw up enough wood to keep you warm for the rest of the week. So we didn't really have a lot of time to do the things that they have now, because life was a lot harder then than it is now. You had to work, or else you didn't eat, or else you didn't stay warm. But you had to cut your own wood. Meat had to be prepared. You didn't have the big packing facilities that they have now in the supermarket.
What kind of house did you live in when you were young?
Well, we lived in several places. Like I said, my dad was a rancher, and we moved from ranch to ranch, and they were usually wood frame houses. When we lived in eastern Oregon, for a short time after Mill and Lux went broke, we lived in a brick house that was built there, but rather small houses. They had small rooms, nothing as palatial and nice as the houses are now. And of course, in those early days, we heated the houses either with heating stoves, burning wood, or coal. That was the source of heat. And of course, my mother cooked over a wood or a coal stove. We didn't have any gas or electricity then. When I was in grammar school, we did all of our homework by coal oil lamps or kerosene lamps. We didn't have electricity out there on the farms like they have now.
Were you a good student when you were in?
Yes, I was a pretty good student. I was a pretty good student. I liked to go to school.
What were your favorite subjects?
Oh, my favorite subjects was probably history and geography.
What were your worst?
My worst was math.
Math. Well, what I want to know is, like, in your early years, can you remember, like, the police, like, say, the sheriff or whatever, were they tough and mean like they all are?
Oh, I think there's always been tough and mean policemen, and there's some that even today that think they're tough and mean, but there was a lot of nice ones too. Not always tough. There used to be more of what we used to call street court when I was a young officer, because you would tell people what to do. You could question them. You didn't have to advise them to get an attorney before you question them. You could settle more things on the street. And I don't mean by brutality or anything like that, but policemen were respected because they knew they'd put you in jail then, and the judges were tough then too. And when you told a person to go home if he's disorderly, he usually went home. If he didn't go home, then he ended up in jail. And jail at that time was more of a stigma on a person than it is now. Now it's some kind of sometimes appears to be a kind of a badge of honor that you did a stretch in jail.
But, like, now, kids have hardly any respect for police officers, sheriffs. What do you think, was it like when they were younger or earlier years, did they have more respect for them?
Yes, they did, because police were looked on, there weren't nearly as many police and sheriffs as there are now. Of course, there wasn't nearly as many kids either. But in those days, justice was more swift and more sure. And it was almost a disgrace then to go to juvenile hall, which now it doesn't appear to be. Nobody ever wanted to be put in the, what they used to call the detention home then. If you'd been in the detention home, you were kind of an outcast in the teenage society during my days. And I think that this, of course, kids weren't as well informed on the worldly ways of life as they are now. All they have to do is watch television. You can see all kinds of life portrayed for you. But in those days, we had no TV, and kids didn't see a lot of the sordid things that they see now on television, a lot of the violence and so forth. And it was just, in my opinion, was a much more orderly society. We still had bad kids, and we had criminals in those days, but we certainly didn't have them in the number that we have now,
mm-hmm.
or in the proportionate number that we have now.
Well, Mr. Dodge, I think that's about it, that we've covered everything. I really want to thank you for
okay.
helping me with
this. All right, you're welcome.